Thank you so much. I want to thank the Association of Business and Industry and the invitation to attend the Iowa Advanced Manufacturing Conference. Nicole, thank you for that introduction. And I also want to thank you, Mike, for your great leadership. I'm sorry I missed Frank Luntz. I have done staff training with my congressional staff using Frank's book, Winning, and Tom Peters' big orange book, The Little Big Things. Because to me, they say a lot about how you empower the people that you have the opportunity and privilege to work with on a day-to-day basis. I told my staff, when you come into the office every morning, I want you thinking, who are we going to help today? When you walk out of here at the end of the day, I want you thinking, who did we help today? So let me start by making a confession. I don't speak a foreign language. And the reason I don't speak a foreign language is because while my classmates at BGM were taking French, which was the only foreign language offered at my tiny high school, I was taking 4 years of high school shop classes. And that's where I learned the basics of welding, machining, metal fabrication, and mechanical drawing by hand before CAD with calipers and micrometers and a slide rule. I know there's some of you in this room who have never seen a slide rule. Let me tell you what you're missing out on. My uncle, growing up in Brooklyn, was the local Chevy dealer. And my cousin was a year older. And we used to go down in my uncle's basement, he lived right next door to me, and tear apart small engines to learn how they worked. Those are some of the fun memories I have of growing up in Brooklyn. But lately, I've been reading this book, Remaking America. It's edited by Richard McCormick, and it has some fascinating ideas in it about how we rebuild manufacturing in America. And he starts the book with this basic premise. Without a strong manufacturing base, the economy has no capacity to create jobs. Manufacturing, with all its supply chains, is the great economic multiplier. That's Richard McCormick. I believe that statement because we have always been a state that builds things. And for Iowa to continue to grow in the 21st century, we have to continue to build things. So I came here today to spend some time with you. Hey, Mark, how are you doing? Share some thoughts on what we can do together to make that happen. So I want to start with some basic truths. The United States became a global superpower by embracing manufacturing. And if any of you have seen this recent program on the Roosevelts, that became abundantly clear, especially as we entered World War II. You all know that China has followed a similar path. In 2000, U.S. manufactured exports were three times those of China. And in 2012, China's manufactured exports were 58% greater than the United States. Between 2000 and 2012, the United States imported $7 trillion more in goods than it exported. And as those imports soared, employment in manufacturing in the United States experienced its greatest decline in U.S. history, dropping from 17 million in 2001 to 10 million a decade later. I know you're thinking every day about what we can do to reverse that trend, and I came here today to talk about some of my ideas to share with you. I think it's long past time the United States had a national manufacturing strategy. Our global competitors have them: China, India, the European Union, and Russia. In 2010, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy established an interagency committee on advanced manufacturing under the National Science and Technology Council, and in 2012, the committee issued a report outlining a national advanced manufacturing strategy. But there was no coordination of manufacturing investments across federal government agencies, and even the definition of manufacturing research varies from agency to agency. We also, I think, need a national infrastructure plan. All of our global competitors have one. Every year, Texas A&M publishes a report on the hidden costs of our failure to meet our aging infrastructure problems. The latest report estimates we pay a hidden tax of $121 billion because we're failing to meet these infrastructure needs. They delay the shipment of the goods you manufacture and cost all of us money. The American Society of Civil Engineers estimates we need to spend $1 trillion to address our core infrastructure needs. And we know that for every $1 billion we invest in infrastructure, 25,000 jobs are created. I also think we need a national infrastructure bank. I think it's one of the biggest opportunities to leverage public and private money to address these aging infrastructure needs. That national infrastructure bank can make and guarantee loans, leverage private capital, sell and issue general purpose bonds, and sell project bonds. But I also want to talk to you about something I know is on your minds, and that's the workforce in manufacturing. That workforce peaked in 1979 at $19.5 million. That was the beginning of my senior year at Iowa State. Not dollars, 19.5 million workers. By 2010, only 10.2% of the U.S. workforce was engaged in manufacturing. Japan and Korea, it's 17%, and Germany, it's 20%. So what are some of the workforce development and talent challenges that we face in manufacturing? One of the things that Remaking America talks about is the generational differences in the workforce that you're seeing every day. I'm a baby boomer. If you ask baby boomers what their distinguishing characteristic is, they'll tell you it's their work ethic. You talk to millennials about what their distinguishing characteristic is as a generation, and they'll tell you it's their use of technology. They grew up with it. So I have four words for you that I think are key to workforce development for manufacturers and I in the future. And those four words are collaboration. Because when I go to startup companies in Iowa, I do not see what I saw when I walked into factories in Iowa 20 years ago. I see people sitting around in a large space with whiteboards. It may be 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're drinking beer and brainstorming and coming up with lots of ideas, some of which are going nowhere, but they are connected all the time. And I see this with my three children, who are all millennials. So one of the challenges that creates for us is how you plug them into a manufacturing workforce and utilize their talents when they have different expectations than my generation did. And that's why education and college affordability issues have a profound impact on your workforce. We're here at DMAC, and Rob Denson has been a leader in talking about how Pell Grants, which are available over a 9-month academic year, penalize community colleges that are helping to train your workforce for tomorrow. Because many of those students are on year-long programs, and the lack of Pell Grants for many of these students in that summer semester poses a substantial economic challenge for them. 110,000 Iowa students are getting Pell Grants. Student loan debt is huge in terms of workforce development. 70% of Iowa College students have it. The average debt is $30,000. That means some students have a lot more of that. And there are 220,000 Iowa students who get nationally federally insured student loans, and the interest rate on them is at 4.4%. The interest rate in the private market for some students who don't have the benefit of their parents' credit history is 12 to 18% right now, which could mean that those students are paying $25,000 more over the life of their loans at those interest rates than they would at 4.4%. But here's the double whammy that came out. I did 9 college affordability workshops. And I heard from people my age about how college affordability is affecting their lives. I had 3 children in college at the same time. And one of these parents came and said, you know, when you're paying into your 401k plan, and it's a voluntary contribution, and you've got three kids in college, you don't fully max the opportunity during that period of time. And then you end up deciding you have to work longer before you can retire. That keeps workforce slots from opening up for their children and their grandchildren because they're staying in the workplace longer. So these are some of the things we have to think about. But one of the things I know you're thinking about is how do we get young people excited about the manufacturing jobs of the 21st century? My brother-in-law works for the American Welding Society, and a couple years ago I went to the welding trailer out at the state fair, the simulator. And it was fascinating because it gives you opportunities for skill training, but it appeals to young people who grew up with technology, and they can see career opportunities that challenge and stimulate them and have good paying financial futures. There's the Hollings Manufacturing Extension Partnership, Project Lead the Way, the National Science Foundation's Advanced Technology Education Center. One that I'm really excited about is the National Digital Engineering and Manufacturing Consortium, which was created in 2011 by the Department of Commerce. It's a regional initiative focused on Midwest manufacturers, and a lot of great Iowa-based manufacturers are involved. There's 20 different projects going on right now involving alternative energy, medical devices, cooling systems, and plastics. But the thing that I think we all care about and are concerned about is innovation, how we continue to be a worldwide leader in Iowan innovation, and how you make that scalable into the products you're making. So I was recently at a meeting with Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. It was during the recession. And the whole point of his speech was why we need to invest in innovation in a down economy. During the question and answer, I was the last person to get to ask a question. And I said, you know, Mr. Schmidt, your company, Google, would not exist if a bored physics professor at Iowa State who liked to drive fast cars and liked to drink drove to the state of Illinois and wrote out the design of the digital computer on a barroom napkin in 1939 in the middle of the Great Depression. And he looked at me and said, you're absolutely right, Congressman, because he knew that. And one of the challenges that we face is right now, according to the Global Innovation Index, we rank 10th behind Ireland in innovation and 74th in graduates in science and engineering. And we can't allow that to continue. I think one of the things we can do to address that is make the research and development tax credit permanent. Because I think it's going to result in more innovation, more capital investments, higher wage R&D jobs, and economic growth. And I also think we should look at how the federal budget process considers R&D and other development costs as a way of trying to promote more. So let me finish by saying this. I spent 4 years on the Pasche County Bridge Crew. I'm a bridge builder, not a bridge burner. I'll work with anyone who has a good idea that's good for Iowa, and I want to give you just a couple of examples of what I mean. The very first bill that I introduced involved community colleges. It was called the New Era Act, and it was designed to help create a workforce training program in biofuels with community colleges in Iowa and around the country. I worked with a Republican from Alabama named Joe Bonner, who was on the Ag Committee, and together we got that in the Farm Bill, and because of that, jobs were created because of students attending community colleges like this in a new and growing industry in Iowa. One of our great Iowa companies, Lennox, approached me when new energy efficiency guidelines were issued that affected refrigerators. And they built a deli refrigeration unit, and they were concerned that these guidelines were going to make it impossible for them to build these products in America. And they asked me to work with a Republican from Georgia because they had a plant in his district. And I looked into it, and I said I would. I brought Democrats to the table. He brought Republicans. We passed a narrow exception in the House and the Senate, and the President signed it into law, and those products are still being made in the United States. Now, the Republican I worked on to do that came to Iowa in 2010 to recruit my opponent. And if I let politics get in the way of doing my job, I wouldn't have worked with them. But it was the right thing to do, and because of working with him, we have a much better relationship now. I also worked with Veterans Affairs chairs from Indiana and Florida to introduce legislation to give employers incentives to hire unemployed veterans, including disabled veterans. And that became part of a veterans package, and employers have those tax credits available. To me, the number one job of Iowa's next senator is to help people. I look forward to working with you to help Iowans work to build things, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to visit with you today. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Braley. We know you are very busy. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Appreciate you coming, speaking to ABI business leaders. And also want to say thank you to Congressman Braley for seeing us last year. There are several ABI leaders that went out to Washington, D.C., and we had the opportunity to meet Congressman Braley and his staff at that visit. So appreciate his time in D.C. as well. So have a great rest of your day. Thank you.